Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Another story that was broken. Story that was broke. That had been broke. That Steve Gregory breaks. Steve just breaks story after story. And this one has to do with the story over the last couple of days we've been covering. Sheila Kuehl, LA County Supervisor. If you remember, she was, quote, either the victim or she was the target of a raid or a warrant issued against her. And the authorities went in to her house 7 o'clock in the morning and grabbed a lot of evidence.
Here's a stack of it right here.
Right here. Okay. Computers, computer equipment, cell phones. I mean, this goes on and on. A lot of stuff they grabbed. And you know how bad everybody looks at 7 o'clock in the morning when the police show up? Let me tell you, it was really rough for her.
Well, let me tell you, though, based on the information I have in front of me, she knew they were headed to her house.
And she still looked bad?
Some people would say that was by design.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, she looked groggy. She was in her pajamas.
Like she was shocked and surprised?
Yeah. She looked like she was just woken up at 7 o'clock. And none of us look very good when we're woken up early in the morning.
So let's go to this document that was given to me yesterday. I was headed down to LA County Sheriff's Department's Homicide Bureau to record for tomorrow night's episode of Unsolved, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And before I left my office, I had received a phone call from a phone number that I did not recognize. And I answered, and the voice says, "Is this Steve Gregory?" And I said, "Yes, it is. What can I do for you?" And they said, "Well, listen, we have something that we think you would like to see." And I said, "Okay," but I can't send it to you, and I don't want to talk about it on the phone. Okay. Well, this is where I'm headed. Is there some place along the way we can meet? And we agreed upon a meeting spot between here and Montebello. So yesterday afternoon, I diverted off of the freeway and met this person in a parking lot, and they handed me this document. And they explained that this is a document that's based on the search warrants, and it also includes copies of text messages.
Whoa. I can't read this. Between whom and whom?
Well, those are text messages that were sent to Sheila Kuehl. So looking at the first one there on the top, at 10:17 p.m. on September 13th, this is the day before the search warrant was executed, Lisa Mandel, who is Supervisor Kuehl's chief of staff, texted Supervisor Kuehl the following, quote, "Just got a call from Don Harrison." Don Harrison's acting county counsel, which is the attorney for the county of Los Angeles and the supervisors and the employees. "She's been informed that the sheriff may have obtained a search warrant for your home and Patty G's." Now, Patty G is Patty Giggins,
right,
the founder of Peace Over Violence, the center of this controversy with the funding. "Per the informant, the warrant is for 7 a.m. tomorrow. Let me know if you want me to do anything."
That's county council that's informing
her. This is the chief of staff.
Chief of staff.
Informing Sheila Kuehl.
Got it.
That she was told by county council about this warrant that would be served at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, which would be on the September 14th. Then a second text comes in at 11:41 p.m. from Don Harrison, county council, texted Supervisor Kuehl the following, quote, "Was the first my team heard of it. Max called Coco tonight with his intel. Come to find out, that's Max Huntsman, the head of the Sheriff's Civilian Oversight Commission. Coco is short for county council. I know from personal experience this is from one of the investigators in here, that Coco refers to county council. So in total, there's 25 messages related to that topic that were sent back and forth on that night, warning Sheila Kuehl that she was going to be searched, her home would be searched.
Yeah, and her statement was she had no idea.
No, she had absolutely no idea. She did say that Max Huntsman tipped her off, but she said it in a very casual way. And that's what's kind of interesting about it, is everyone's sort of pretending like this isn't a big deal.
Yeah, well, is there any legal jeopardy for county council getting information about a upcoming search warrant excuse me, to inform his client?
Investigator was telling me that tipping off a target of a search warrant prior to the execution of the warrant is a crime.
Even from your attorney?
Well, the attorney got the information from an unlikely source, and I was also told that Sheila Kuehl has an obligation under the ethics rules to notify that she had been told about it. And if you, the story I did the other day, and you and I did not get a chance to talk about the story I broke a few days ago about the email that goes back to 2016 that was written by a deputy of special projects for Sheila Kuehl's office. And the email was to Patty Giggins, again, the founder and head of
Peace Over Violence. Yeah, why don't you explain that, the connection between the two? Because there's a little, it's complicated, but you're very good at making it
well,
easy.
Well, it's complicated and it's not. It's funny because what this really boils down to, I mean, if we go back to the impetus of this, it has to do with how Peace Over Violence received funding.
And that's an organization.
Organization that was brought in by the MTA to run and manage this sexual harassment hotline. And this was for employees of MTA and for the riders on the MTA system, that they could call and report incidents of sexual assault or sexual violence or sexual harassment. And that was done in a way where it was a no-bid contract. Now, Sheila Kuehl, by default, as a member of the Board of Supervisors, is also a member of the MTA board, just like the LA City Council members are. And the assertion here, the allegation, is that, you know, Kuehl manipulated this in a way to funnel funding to Patty Giggins, but do it in a way where it's small chunks of money so it doesn't really raise red flags.
And they're very close.
Yeah.
They've been friends for many years.
Right. And so to do it in such a way where it doesn't raise red flags.
Okay.
Because if you do it over a certain amount of money, it has to go to a full board vote. And this was done in a way where there was no bid contracts and the money was just keeps going. And then there was evidence that the actual hotline itself didn't really do much. They didn't get any calls. I think they figured out the money spent on the program and the amount of calls they got, it came down to $8,000 a call is how much it cost to run run this program. So anyway, that's kind of the impetus of this. And now you fast forward. There was allegations or assertions by Sheila Kuehl the day of her the search warrant was executed in front of her house. And she tells the media, and I have the clip, and she tells the media, I didn't know anything about the funding for this organization. I didn't even vote on it. I don't know anything about it. Basically playing dumb on the whole thing. But this email that fell into my lap the other day clearly shows that her deputy chief of special projects actually emailed Patty Giggins back in the conclusion of a meeting saying, hey, thanks a lot for meeting with us. This is great. It was wonderful. We want to do this. We want to do that. And I'm going to make sure that you receive the funding you need. Our office is going to make sure to work to get the funding you need.
Now, this is a staffer. Is there proof of a connection that Sheila Kuehl did know? Do we have that, or is that supposition?
Well, it could be.
Because the chief of staff can do things that doesn't go up.
No, Sheila Kuehl, like every supervisor, is briefed on every aspect.
Okay.
Yeah, they're briefed on every aspect. Can I give you a smoking gun that's being held by Sheila Kuehl? No, of course not. But if you think about the way politics are run and operated in any kind of operation like this, if you have a deputy or a chief of staff of any kind like that, you know the supervisor's being briefed on a constant basis on what's going on. And especially when it comes to dealing with Sheila's close friend, of course they all know what's going on. I mean, this is the way it's operated. So that's kind of what brings us up to today, because that email that came out the other day does show a connection between Sheila Kuehl's office and the funding stream for Peace Over Violence. And then this document that landed in my lap yesterday goes on to show these text messages warning Sheila Kuehl that there was a search warrant executed and that it would happen at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Now, real quickly, as you explained to me during the break, the law says that she should not be warned, that the people that didn't warn her had to be objective and not get involved.
Well, here's the way it lays out legally. This is based on Sergeant Max Fernandez. This is his declaration to the court yesterday. It says, based on his training and experience, Tipping off a target of a search warrant prior to the execution of the warrant is a crime. Penal Code Section 148 prohibits obstructing officers in the execution of their duties, including serving search warrants. And Penal Code 168 prohibits public officials, prosecutors, judges, clerks, or peace officers, from disclosing the fact that a search warrant's been issued prior to its execution for the purpose of preventing the search or seizure of property. And then he says, the only people who knew about the issuance of this search warrant when it was issued were among those enumerated categories. So at minimum, whoever told Max Huntsman about this warrant committed a crime. So that's where it's going to have to start. Because they talk about the fact that when they went to Patty Giggins' house, that she had no cell phone with her. There was no phone. And they thought that was very suspicious. That
who doesn't have a phone?
Yeah, and that they knew she had an iPhone because the text messages from, the text messages that were retrieved from Sheila Kuehl's phone shows a conversation. So it was not present at her home or on her person. And the guy says, so he concluded that the absence of her phone was that she was aware that the warrant was going to be executed and she disposed of the phone in some manner beforehand. So, and that also her attorney was at her residence just 15 minutes into the search. So they had all gotten tipped off about it. So this is the challenge now, because when this was presented yesterday in court, also remember, Kuehl and her team and county council are arguing that the search warrant itself was kind of obtained illegally, because the allegation is the sheriff has a relationship with this particular judge that issued the warrant. Well, a different judge yesterday ruled that wasn't the case, that the warrant is not only valid, but it was obtained in a way that's perfectly legal. The thing about this bill is that before we get on the break here, this is exactly the thing that the sheriff has said he's been trying to ask for help with the attorney general's office. He goes back to February, where he provided a letter showing that he wanted the AG to come in and help him in his office investigate these allegations of corruption within county government. So this has been a pretty big challenge for the sheriff to try to get people to come forward. But he's also faced with the fact that this is a very, very close knit of political operatives we're dealing with here. You're dealing with a lot of very powerful Democrats. You're dealing with a lot of very powerful people that goes all the way up to the Biden administration.
I want to make a point about the Board of Supervisors. A lot of people don't understand that the Board of Supervisors for the County of L.A., probably the most powerful board in the country.
Agreed.
It is as much money as the city spends, and the budget is astronomical. It is dwarfed by the budget of the Board of Supervisors. Yeah. And that's five people. It's not a city council of 30-something people with a mayor involved. It's five people that control all of it. And there probably is no organization as powerful and so controls so much money as this board. So, and people don't know that.
No, with the most densely populated county in the United States.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say that when this investigation came out in the feds, and you and I both know, when the feds are knocking on your doorstep, they've already got a case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with Mark Ridley Thomas, they're going back many, many years, and you know that they've already got information on him. Then the incestuous relationship between him and other politicians, and then the issues with Karen Bassett have come up now with her connection
to USC.
And, de facto connection to the Mark Ridley Thomas case. So I think the Mark Ridley Thomas trial in November is going to be interesting. I think when it begins and you start to listen and hear all the evidence that starts to come out, I'm curious. I will tell you this much. I can't tell you too much, but I can tell you that some of the information I was able to obtain talked about some of the other individuals that Sheila Kuehl was talking to on the day or two before the search warrant. And let's just say that it's a list of other politicians in our area that she was on the phone with talking. And in fact, there was a lot of different conversations about people who are suspect right now.
Hey, is this a hornet's nest? That as soon as it opens up, well, it's this thing is going to be very far-reaching and a lot of people are going to get stung.
And I think this is why there's a lot of panic right now, I think the Mark Ridley Thomas trial case is going to be that's going to be sort of the focal point or the ground zero for all of this stuff to happen, because you have the stuff that went on with Jose Huizar, Mitch Englander, and you've got other city council people that have been under suspicion for a while. I think the Mark Ridley Thomas case, because it's federal like this, and he's connected to so many different people, you're going to see this thing, I think, bust wide open. But here's the important part about this. Okay, great. So if the feds don't go after all these individuals, because locally, that's what people are afraid of. Even now, bringing it back to the Sheila Kuehl situation, when the sheriff said he reached out to the attorney general's office for help on this case, he said, listen, we have concerns. Here's our concerns. Well, to this day, the sheriff says they've still not received any correspondence back from Rob Bonta's office about other allegations of county corruption. So that, in their mind, is evidence that the attorney general's office, that they're a little nervous about the attorney general's office doing even this case with Sheila Kuehl because of his connection to her and the Democratic Party.
And we've talked about this before because I have a couple of sources that I was able to have for several years, just peripheral to everything. It just so happens I fell into this. And that is finding out there has been a federal task force looking at public corruption in L.A. City Council for years.
Sure.
Years. L.A. City Council, the politicians here in L.A. Have been on the radar with the feds for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's like Chicago. Remember back in the day with Chicago? It was just like you couldn't throw a stick without hitting somebody corrupt. But the thing now with the Rob Bonta connection, and this is the thing that's got...
Who's the Attorney General in California.
Yeah, it's got everyone concerned now is he going to do a thorough investigation on this? Is he going to drag his feet? And I want to make it very clear. I know investigators in the California Department of Justice. I know some of them, and they are some of the best of the best. They are incredible investigators, and they're dedicated. But they serve at the pleasure of an appointed / elected official.
But we will, if they're told to slow down, that will come out, will it not?
I can only tell you this. These individuals, investigators, are always very good at what they do, but they're always very good at following orders.
Okay.
That's all I can tell you.
Fair enough. Let's move into tomorrow's segment, tomorrow's episode of Unsolved, and it's another beaut. And this one has a fair number of moving pieces.
Yes. Thank you, Tyler, for that. We're talking about the death of Timothy Troutman. This happened May 14th, 1979. This young boy at the time was 13 years old. He and two of his buddies were walking across an open field near California State University, Dominguez Hills. It was a big vacant field at the time near 190th Street and Avalon Boulevard. And as they were walking across this field, they came upon this young man who was described in his mid-20s. And this young man had been smoking a cigarette, had been drinking, and he got in a conversation with this guy. Well, the guy was able to convince Timothy's two buddies to go and look for another man that this guy was looking for across the street at the strip mall. So he goes over there. Well, when he comes back, the man had pulled out a knife and had threatened to kill Timothy in front of these two boys. And the two boys didn't know whether to stay and help or run and get help. They chose to run and get help. So they tried to go get help, and they were going to these businesses. And it's 1979, and these two boys are running in there. No one took them seriously. They finally get to a hamburger stand and got convinced of an employee of this hamburger stand to call the cops. And the cops get there, and they go to the field, and they can't find the guy, and they can't find Tim. And they go search around, and all of a sudden, they come upon Tim's body. And he had been stabbed 40 times.
And it was in the field?
In the field. Left in the field. And so the interesting thing about this case is that up until recently, they didn't have any leads on it. And they also talk about the fact that this case had been sort of poorly handled back in the day. And it's just, it was the case file, they showed me the case file. It was just all these pictures that they couldn't explain and notes, and it was very thin. So they were hoping to get some new information on it. Well, out of the blue, they get a phone call from somebody. And that phone call leads them to what they describe as a person of interest. This is just recently. These two cold case detectives, Sean McCarthy and Rich Tomlin, were telling me the story. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow night. I have the sketch that was actually done in May of 1979. And here's the really sad part, as if the poor 13-year-old being stabbed 40 times isn't bad enough. It was also his birthday. Ugh. He and the two buddies were out celebrating his birthday, just having fun and hanging out. As young kids do, and it was the day of his birthday, and it's just, this was 43 years ago this happened, And when they went around to this neighborhood in Carson, they're talking to people today that remember this happening. And they said it was a lot like the Night Stalker case, you know, that they had someone out there that had just killed a 13-year-old kid. And they said they remember everyone locking themselves in their houses every night. No kids were out playing for a long time. It really, really shocked an entire community.
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is as you describe, you've got these two young boys that are going business to business and no one took them very seriously. I'm assuming there were people that were working at the businesses that were in their 20s at the time and now in their 60s, maybe.
Sure.
You know, I wonder how they feel.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because one of the things I've learned in doing this show and talking to these people is that one of the biggest motivators, separate from money, for people to come forward is guilt. That's one of the biggest motivators for these people to come forward with information or something that they might have remembered. In fact, the kid, one of the two buddies, is still alive. He's in his 40s now. And the detective was telling me that he still, to this day, 43 years later, still second guesses his decision not to stay and help his friend as opposed to run and try to get help.
Yeah, but how old at the time was he?
He was 11.
Oh, I mean, how do you?
But he remembers it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's true. Do you know what? As far as guilt is concerned, and I haven't thought about this for years. I had become friends with Mark Furman, the detective. You know, mm-hmm. I have a lot of people. You know, I'm not as close to the cops as you are, but I have friends
sure.
with police officers. And this was before the OJ case, years before the OJ case. And I remember, and Mark is homicide robbery,
right?
And we were talking about the various. You know, people who commit crimes, and we were talking about the kinds of criminals who do this. And I said, so who's the easiest person to catch? And he says, cops. he said right out, he said, when a cop commits a crime, especially a serious crime like murder or a robbery, and I go, why is that possible? Because they're always so guilty that it really, really affects
isn't that
them.
Isn't that really weird?
Yeah, it's just they're easy to catch. And then, of course, I go, don't you feel sorry? He goes, no, please. He's, that guy's just a criminal. Yeah, didn't care. Whoever did it. He was very objective about it.
Well, before we go, though, I do want to tell everybody that we are now taking emails. We were getting ready to put our next live in-person taping together of Unsolved. This was a great event. We did our last one at the Morton's downstairs, and we only limited it to 50 people. We bring in detectives from our past season, and then we tape a couple episodes in person. People get to experience that, and they get to meet the detectives from the season, and they get to see how we put the show together. So we're accepting emails for that. All you have to do is email unsolved@iheartmedia.com. That's unsolved@iheartmedia.com, or my email, stevegregory@iheart. And just tell me your favorite episode, and give us your contact information, and we'll put it on the list, and maybe we'll select you to come hang out for an in-person taping.
All right. And so as you talk about as exciting as it is and how successful it is, as soon as you mention Morton's, that's where you meet. What's the first thing that came to my mind?
Steak.
Yes, the food.
The food.
So,
and we provide a little nosh.
You do?
We provide nosh.
And it doesn't cost them.
It doesn't cost them, no, but it is a cash bar. We're just, you know, we are iHeart, so we can't afford to give away free booze.
Yeah. I'm surprised that there's free food.
Yeah,
that's not used food.
But I think we took it out of the Dodgers marketing budget.
That is so funny. So this is season three.
Season three, and we'll wrap up next month, and then we'll have some. Then we'll repeat the season through the winter, and then I found out yesterday that Jacob and I are working on a 2-hour documentary on the opioid crisis for KFI. So that's our next project.
Will that be part of Unsolved or just a
separate? No, that'll be a KFI News production.
That's great. So, as I know, this thing is growing and we talked about your numbers. We had dinner the other night and you talked about the numbers of people that are, actually coming into, Unsolved listening mm-hmm. and, people that are being part of it. In terms of the number of police that are involved, in terms of, the number of tips that people call in, how quickly is this thing growing?
Oh, it's growing exponentially. I will also tell you that we're doing something tomorrow night also that we've never done before. We're promoting an event, the Anaheim Police Department, the Anaheim's Homicide Bureau. They put on a fundraiser every year for their Cops for Kids program, And they are doing something that what we've done too. And they're going to present a case to the public. These detectives whom they who hate to talk publicly about anything. But they're going to do an event called Anaheim Confidential. This is the fifth year that they've done it. And it benefits Cops for Kids and the Orange County Homicide Association. And they're going to come together. And this is how popular it's become because I caught wind of it a couple years ago. I haven't had a chance to go yet. I want to go this year. It's October 14th. And it's going to be in at the River. Oh, gosh. I just knew I had it in front of me. It'll be on the KFI AM 640 site. So
And the public is invited.
Public's invited. Yeah, you can buy tickets. And you go, and it's this open market where you go, and then you go to this open market. The food's included, everything's included, and then you go inside for about an hour and a half. And these detectives are going to lay out their entire case. It's a case that's already been adjudicated, so they're going to lay out this case from the actual investigators involved, and they're going to talk about all these cases. And people just love this stuff. So
sounds cool. Yeah,
it's really cool stuff. So that we're having them on the show tomorrow night as well to talk more detail.
All right, Steve. As always,
thanks, buddy.
A pleasure. And we'll probably overeat again.
Very soon.
Very, very soon, as we have a want to do.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.